Hello, I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, December the 19th. We will talk about the economy this hour and what President Bush had to say on Monday about the economy and what he called on Congress to do and not to do when it comes to the economy.
Congress cannot take economic vitality for granted. There's some positive things Congress can do to make sure that the economy continues to grow and people are working and realizing dreams. And there's some negative things they can do. And the most negative thing that Congress can do in the face of some economic uncertainty is to raise taxes on the American people.
President Bush acknowledged there were some storm clouds, like the housing market situation and the credit crunch and high energy prices. So some storm clouds and concerns with the economy, but that the underpinnings of the economy are strong. So do you agree? Are you worried about this housing market crisis, the credit crunch, energy costs, food costs? They're up now. And many of us apparently are holding back on Christmas shopping expenditures. Retailers are reporting that an important indicator, the sale of women's clothing, is down 6% this season, and many retailers are worried about that. We will talk about all of this with our guest economist, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Kevin Quinn is an associate professor of economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Good morning.
Good morning.
So did the president do a good job reassuring all of us that the economy's in pretty good shape?
Well, I don't know about everyone else. He didn't convince me exactly. I'm sort of reminded of the Animal House scene where Kevin Bacon at the end is yelling at the riot that all is well.
So then maybe you agree with, Democratic Senator Charles Schumer after that address said, "What world is President Bush living in to be so out of touch with the economic realities families and markets are facing?"
Well, I doubt if he's that out of touch. I think that it's more along the lines of trying to jawbone the economy up. Our economy and the modern industrialized world economy is largely built on the idea of confidence and trust. And what has happened in the credit markets as a result of this subprime situation has shaken that trust and shaken that credit. And that's a scary thing indeed.
Yeah, talk about how scary this whole subprime mortgage meltdown thing is.
Well, first of all, if you are a person who is facing an immediate foreclosure, and there are a lot of people in that situation right now, I think there were something like 200,000 foreclosures in November. You know, you don't really care about the macro economy. You care about your own personal situation, and it's bad. You know, if the American dream is to own a home, then the American nightmare is to get foreclosed on that home. So for anybody in that situation, you know, those 200,000 plus who knows how many more, that's a very nasty situation. There has been over the last 10 years or so, or maybe longer than that, a growing divide between those at the top of the scale and those at the bottom of the scale. And there are a lot of people that want to politicize that, and I would leave that for another day. But the fact is it's going on, and there's a lot of forces making that happen. Those that are at the top are doing pretty well. If you look at the top, you know, 15 or 20%, those are good times. If you look at the bottom, it's not so good. So if you are at the top of this distribution and you heard President Bush's remarks, you might fully agree with him. If you are representing people at the bottom, as I think that Senator Schumer is, you probably agree more with him.
Yeah. Well, so I'm wondering, with your, you know, economist hat on, Are we facing a probable recession, or where does the economy stand right now?
Well, I wouldn't say probable. Most economists are in the range between a third to a half is the likelihood of a recession in the early part of next year, which is scary enough. We haven't seen anything that truly looks like a recession since the early 90s. There was the dip after September 11th, but Using the traditional measures of recession, it wasn't. There were a couple of bad months, but it wasn't a prolonged contraction. Mm-hmm. One place where I would agree with President Bush is that we have had fairly strong economic growth. Our unemployment rate is fairly low by historical standards. It's under 5%. Inflation has been fairly under control, although that's getting worrisome. What's scary more than anything else is whether or not people really will retract. So I think it's a a confidence thing, as I said before. Obviously, if you are strapped because of your mortgage situation, that's a different, for other reasons, that's a different story. But not everybody who is leaving the credit card in the wallet this Christmas is facing immediate foreclosure. I think they're just sobering up a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't bought any new outfits this winter.
Oh, well.
The women's clothing indicator is down, apparently, and that has a lot of people worried in the retail industry.
Well, I think, there's some ads on TV and some subtle shifts, perhaps, in the culture that may be making the conspicuous consumption of the last 10 years a little less cool than it used to be.
Yeah.
But that said, I think it's as much as anything else that credit card companies are starting to raise rates and lower credit limits. People are getting nervous. They're spending more on gas and on food than they used to. So maybe that leaves a little bit less for, the new outfit.
Yeah. Kevin Quinn, our guest, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking with us this hour about the economy and what President Bush said about the economy this week, trying to reassure us that the economy is pretty good. He says, though, there definitely are some storm clouds and concern because of the nation's credit crunch and the mortgage problems. The president spoke to about 80 Rotary Club members in Virginia on Monday. The speech was intended to show he is aware of the public's edgy mood these days. Consumer confidence has eroded as turmoil in the housing and credit market have battered the economy. The president chose to highlight positive economic news, such as job growth. He says his administration has a strategy for tackling the nation's economic woes. We're talking about the economy, welcoming your questions for our guest, wondering if you are edgy these days about the economy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with John Munson in for Ben Marins today, talking after 5 o'clock about the year in medicine, 2007 and the year in medicine. What were some of the most significant medical advancements this year? Well, we'll find out after 5. We're talking about the economy this hour. President Bush telling us that the economy is sound on Monday. Do you agree? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest, Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And to the phones we go, Kyle in Lake Geneva. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call so fast. I just want to make, a comment. I feel that President Bush, his comments about the economy are totally false. I think we're in a much, much worse state than anyone is choosing to believe. I'm not really sure why people don't realize it. But, I mean, we've got, a federal government with almost $10 trillion of debt, and the dollar is just weakening every day. I think it's a terrible situation, and it's a result of a failed policy. And it's causing a lot of problems. And I just wanted to make another comment. I think the reason we're seeing such a huge this debate over illegal immigration is directly tied to the bad economy. Because as your guest has said, people are scared. They're losing their jobs. They're not making as much. And unfortunately, the scapegoats are becoming illegal immigrants.
Well, I'm not sure we want to get into that debate, but any reaction, Professor Quinn?
Again, I think it depends where you stand. If you've been near the top of the income distribution, let's say the top 15-20%, things have been good. Corporate profits have been healthy. Your stock portfolio, up until fairly recently, has been growing. If you can afford your mortgage, your home situation is pretty good. So for those folks, it's been pretty good. Toward the bottom, Mm-hmm. Not so much.
Yeah. Talk about some of these plans to try to help those people who are in mortgage trouble. The Fed, I guess, has a plan now to try to, I don't know if it's considered a bailout, but to help the people who are facing the mortgage foreclosures.
Yeah, the Fed plan is more forward-looking than backward-looking. There's a number of things that they proposed a couple of days ago about this, and in particular, I'm trying to find the list here of exactly where this is. In any event, the Fed is one of many agencies that's in charge of regulating lenders. One of the problems is that since everybody's in charge of regulating them, nobody's in charge of regulating mm-hmm. them, and they've been more interested in macroeconomic issues than they have been in consumer protection issues, something that has that the Democrats in Congress have made a strong point about. Whenever anything is bad, the party that's out of power in Congress makes noises about reducing the Fed's autonomy, which I think would be a horrible idea. But I looked at the list of proposals yesterday. They seem very common sense to me, that they want to do away with the so-called ninja loans, the ninja mortgages, mm-hmm. which are no income, no job, no assets. They want to strengthen the truth in lending information so that people actually know what they're signing. They want to change the way that penalties for refinancing are. It's a list of what seems to me to be fairly common sense, and it's interesting because the American Bankers Association thinks that these are horrible ideas because it will reduce the amount of lending at the bottom end of the distribution. The Democrats think it's a terrible idea because they don't think it goes far enough. Mm. So they sort of plowed the middle ground here, and I think that this is an issue that's in serious political play.
Yeah. And well, let me take another call. Mark in McHenry, Illinois. Hi.
Good morning, Joy, and mm-hmm. your guest. I think that a lot of the lack of confidence that people have in the economy and direction of the country directs back to the lack of confidence they have in the ability of this administration to tackle any problem without making it worse, as Tom Oliphant said yesterday morning about in his book about utter incompetence. I have very little when I hear George Bush tell me that his administration has a plan to address the economic woes of the country, I think, oh boy, here it goes. And I don't think that we're going to achieve more of a level of confidence and stability until we have replaced this administration.
Well, all right. The president is saying that Congress can help the economy by passing an energy bill, Professor Quinn?
Yes, I think that a lot of the policy of the Republicans of the last 25 years, or a centerpiece of the economic policy, has been for inexpensive energy. Interestingly enough, the effects of the much higher gasoline and energy prices on the macroeconomy have been much more muted than people have believed. If you think about 2 or 3 years ago, if somebody would have said that we would barely blink an eye at $3 a gallon gas, I think people would have been surprised. But the economy has performed fairly well the last couple of years, not great, but fairly well, despite very high energy prices. I think that that thinking that's in the Bush administration about energy and cheap energy and supply side of energy is beginning to change a little bit in the light of some environmental issues. And so I think probably that the next step forward in energy is going to be left to the next administration.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that the president warned Congress saying the thing you should not do is raise taxes because that would have a devastating effect on our economy.
Well, that is true at the bottom end, I guess. It's not entirely clear to me if higher taxes at the higher end of the distribution would have an effect or not.
Yeah. And to Michael in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just have a question for you. What do you think when, people like the presidential candidates now are saying things like, we're going to continue with our course in this war in Iraq, we don't really want to pull out. We're going to fix Medicare, Social Security, but at the same time, we're not going to raise taxes. How does that affect our economy? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, the standard Econ 101 answer for that is twofold. One, if the government does not raise taxes but continues to spend more and more, well, that money's got to come from someplace. They borrow it. They go typically into private markets, and they compete with private borrowers in order to raise that money. In years past, that was typically done more domestically. Now it's being done much more internationally. China is awash in foreign reserves, as are the oil nations. And what it means is perhaps we borrow more money from them. And as long as they're willing to supply that at a low interest rate, probably not so bad. Now, what happens when they hold a lot of debt is a different question. The other issue is that by stimulating the economy by spending like that, it tends to be rather inflationary. And in the last 10 years or so, that the stimulation of the economy through private and public means has not led to very much inflation, probably because productivity has increased so much so that the capacity of the economy to produce has been able to keep up with demand. How much longer that can continue is not clear. The fact that prices do seem to be maybe going up a little bit beyond just energy and food suggests that maybe we need to pay more attention to that problem.
Linda in Monroe, hi.
Good morning, Joy and Professor Quinn. I agree with all the first callers. I don't agree with President Bush, though. I think bailing out the hedge fund dealers that started the housing crisis is not necessarily going to solve the problem. Now, four Democratic candidates that are running for president are saying that the hedge fund dealers should be taxed, they shouldn't be allowed to headquarter their businesses offshore, and that regulation should be put on the hedge funds. Now, because this isn't the first time that they have caused a crisis, now these hedge fund dealers, they're using the same tactics that Enron was using years back. Now, look at the federal income tax that our government's losing because of this. Now, would you support the four Democratic candidates that think that hedge fund dealers should be taxed?
Yeah, we only have about a minute or so before the newscast.
Yeah, I'll leave the politics to people smarter than me. But the issue, I think, is more than just a moral issue on this. It's a question of what do we need to do to make sure that our credit markets remain intact. And we might have to do some unpleasant things in order to make that happen.
Yeah. Kevin Quinn, our guest, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking with us this hour about all things economy, following up on President Bush's speech on Monday, saying that the country has had a good economic run in the past 6 years or so, that the underpinnings of the economy are strong. But he did acknowledge, President Bush did acknowledge, that there are some storm clouds and concerns on the horizon with the economy. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions for Professor Quinn on this. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talking about the home mortgage crisis, the credit crunch, holiday sales, and what they all mean for the economy's future here on the Ideas Network.
If you think about where we were coming out of 2001 and where we are today, you can't help but say the plan worked. Cutting taxes helped stimulate economic growth.
That was President Bush on Monday talking about the economy in a speech that was meant to reassure us in a time when consumer confidence has eroded in the economy. Worried about the failing housing market, worried about the credit crunch and the mortgage meltdown, and holiday shopping numbers are down. We are talking about the economy this hour and wondering what your thoughts and questions are for our guest, Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. The president acknowledged that there are some storm clouds and concerns on the horizon when it comes to the economy, but that the underpinning of the economy is good. Our next caller is Stephen in Fish Creek. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I was at a local Ron Paul meetup group meeting last night, and I met a gold bug. man who makes a living investing in gold, and he said that essentially gold at about $800-some an ounce is still somewhat of a bargain to where he thinks it's going to go. He also said that it's increased in value 25% in the last year, and he said that's not so much about gold increasing in value, but it's that the dollar has lost 25% of its value in 1 year.
So is that true, Professor Quinn?
That sounds about right. I haven't looked it up exactly, precisely what the gold is worth. Let's see here. It is up about 24.2% in the last year, thereabouts.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was just going to ask this follow-up. I'll go to Claire in Madison for it. Hi, Claire.
Hi. Let's see. I wanted to ask Professor Quinn what effect he thinks the drop in the dollar will have on our local economy and on trade, you know, with other parts of the world.
That is an excellent question. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an ill wind indeed that blows no good at all. And one of the effects of the lower interest rates that we've seen recently trying to, you know, stimulate the economy and provide some liquidity as a result of the subprime mortgage, that's dropped the dollar, which is bad for us if we buy things from overseas because it makes the products we buy, the imports we buy, more expensive. But it has the opposite effect on our exporters. And so there has been a little bit less competition from foreign companies on price for a variety of different industries, heavy industries in some cases, and we're looking more attractive. You've probably seen stories about the Canadian dollar is roughly at parity for the first time in a long time with the American dollar, and so what's happening is you're getting all these Canadians coming across the border and buying things. Well, that happens in a larger sense, too. And what's happening is our trade deficit looks like it's kind of bottomed out and maybe is improving a little bit. Now, we're still in a deficit situation, but it's going in the right direction, probably as a direct result of the fact that the dollar is worth less.
Thank you, Claire. Laura in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. After the failure of the 0.25% decrease in the interbank loan rates, the feds decided that they would make those loans available through an anonymous process. Now, it seems to me that the lack of transparency is one of the reasons we are in this mess. Don't the investors in those banks, aren't they entitled to know if their bank is borrowing big time?
I wasn't aware of that proposal, but in general, I guess I would agree with you that what happened was people bought these bonds thinking that they were, you know, top-rated, very safe bonds, and found out that there were termites in the house, that they were just riddled with questionable loans that had been stacked on top of each other, and sort of the risk looked like it had been laundered out. If, in fact, the Fed is doing that, I have no reason to doubt the caller on that. I'm guessing it's because it's thought of as being more of a short-term kind of a thing, because everybody is on shaky ground, and that rattles investors' confidence, and I think they're trying to stimulate more investment.
Yeah. So when the Fed recently lowered that interest rate, was that enough to stave off a possible recession or not?
Well, financial markets did not think so. I heard a lot of very smart people saying they were pretty sure that the Fed was going to lower it by 0.5%. The effect of doing that, for those of your listeners that aren't that familiar with it, is that it makes it a little easier for banks to go out and lend money, and if people can get money more easily, they're more likely to do things that stimulate the economy. It's a lot easier for the Fed to tighten the economy than it is for them to push people to spend. You know, you can lead a horse to water, sort of a thing. The Fed has this balancing act between trying to keep the economy somewhere near full employment, you know, making it grow, and doing away with inflation. There's some that believe that that's not a trade-off. I'm not one of them. I think that you can overstimulate the economy. The problem is that it takes 6 months for a rate cut to really have some sort of an effect. Well, it's difficult to see 6 months out and see exactly what's going to happen. I'd say prevailing wisdom is that that rate cut probably by itself is not enough to significantly reduce the risk of recession during the next two or three quarters.
An email from Michael in Krivitz. The 1980s housing bubble in L.A. resulted in housing values that declined 20% over a five-year period. Is that what we are now looking at nationally?
I'm not familiar precisely what happened out in L.A., but I do recall that there were some very optimistic scenarios about the direction of real estate forever that were mostly felt on the coasts, kind of like now.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that prices in the next several years did recover rather quickly. And if you look at what happened, you know, the prices before this most recent thing happened, I think you'd find that they'd more than recovered. I think a better analogy might be to look at what happened in Japan in 1989. There was a, those of you that are old enough to remember there was this Japanese housing bubble that happened there, in some ways very similar to what happened here, that there had been a lot of pressure on Japanese banks to liberalize their hidebound activities, so there was a lot of clever financial engineering that was going on, and then people got caught up in the fever. Well, it took a long time, and maybe they haven't recovered exactly yet. It's a scary lesson because the Japanese economy, primarily as a result of this situation, was in the dumps for a long time. I hope that doesn't happen here. I suspect it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't take as long to get out of it, but you know, it's going to take a while for the mouse to get through the snake here.
Yeah. You know, I just saw on one of the national newscasts on television the other day that food prices are on their way up, and there are concerns about this is like the first signs of some inflation taking a bite out of our food budget.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, every financial cycle is a little bit different, and unfortunately, just like generals often fight the last war, economists often fight the last recession or last mm-hmm. inflation period. A lot of heat has been taken for that by ethanol. That there's been a tremendous increase in the demand for grains as a result of, you know, ethanol policy. But there's more to it than that. I think. I'm not an expert in this.
So grains are going to ethanol rather than feeding the cows or the chickens that provide the
right.
So food
or pricing. Feeding people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
A big chunk of the world lives sort of on the edge of the global economy. And one of the things that's happened in the last 100 years or so, as farmers in Wisconsin know, is that the agriculture business and technology has changed radically. We've had green revolutions that have allowed the world to grow much more food than before and at a much lower price. It's possible that we've exhausted much of those opportunities, and as the world increases its middle class, which is happening, the world is growing. There's still a billion people that, you know, are really in trouble, but there's a vast number of people that are sort of joining the party. Well, they're buying food because they can, and that's driving the price of food up as well. I think that could be a real issue in the next 20 to 25 years.
Yeah, we are talking with Kevin Quinn. He's an associate professor of the economy at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking about the strengths and weaknesses of our economy this hour, welcoming your questions, maybe your worries about the economy this hour. Following up on a speech that President Bush gave on Monday, trying to reassure all of us that the economy is pretty good, despite the mix of a failing housing market, a national credit crunch, and surging energy costs. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Many of you have told us that Wisconsin Public Radio is a trusted friend. As your friend, we'd like to help you celebrate an anniversary, birthday, or any special occasion with our day sponsorship program. You choose the day, and we'll do the rest. For more information, call 800-747-7444.
Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be a mostly sunny day today with a high temperature in the upper 20s. Turning cloudy tonight with some patchy fog possible, a low of about 18. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in our next hour, we're going to be talking with the author of the book Closing the Food Gap, Resetting the Table in the Land of Plenty. Our guest says there are two food systems in America, the one for the poor and the local, organic, highly nutritious and expensive, somewhat, food available for everyone else. He'll offer solutions to this growing problem after 8 o'clock. Back to the phones now for Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Mark in Elkhorn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question, and I'd like to comment. The 401ks, which started in the IRAs in the 80s, to me seem to have artificially propped up the market by keeping money in the market that normally would be taken out, or right now all you can do is reshift it. And with the president's plan, although it was scuttlebutted, to privatize Social Security, it seems to me that it would also do the same in keeping money in the stock market. And I'm just curious as to your guest's comment on this, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Professor Quinn?
Well, I think that's true. And I think, in my personal opinion, the 401k and the privatization of retirement funds seems to me to be one of the great successes of the last 25 years. There are people that would disagree with that, but given the state that many pension funds are in, I think that defined benefit rather than defined contribution plans, defined contribution rather than defined benefit plans seem to make sense. And I agree. I think the baby boomers realizing that they're not going to live forever, some of the baby boomers actually realize they're not going to live forever, and they're thinking about saving for retirement, they have put money into the market in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that a Social Security system that would make that larger would also put more money in the markets as well, or has the potential of putting more money in the markets as well. My main concern about that policy is, how will they manage that? Will they restrict how people can invest their money, in which case the regulators are going to have an awful lot to say about, you know, which kinds of investments are a good idea and a bad idea, and that makes me very nervous. The other thing that makes me very nervous is that there inevitably will be people who either failed to save enough or made mistakes in their choices or just got unlucky. What will we do with them? I don't think we'll let them die in the street. My guess is that there'll be some sort of a government program that would bail them out too, and in a sense it may penalize those that were wise in their decisions. So I think there's a lot of road ahead before we were to do something like that.
Michael in Danbury, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy, and to your guest. Would the guest be kind enough to explain? It's my understanding that inflation is driven because there's too many dollars chasing too few goods. Yet at this period of time, we have more goods and services than ever. And since people are not buying, the prices seem to be driven by the fact of people trying to recover their profits. So they're raising their prices for profitability and to get their profits up. What is that? Could you explain the circumstance? Because that is, in fact, what's going on.
Sure. This is something that my students are terribly uninterested to hear in my Econ 101 class. I'm glad to be asked. There are a couple of different ways you can wind up with inflation. One of them is if the government creates too many dollars through monetary policy, in which case you're going to have more dollars. If you have the dollars growing faster than the goods that are produced, eventually you'll see some sort of increases in price. Another way that it can happen, though, is if demand, for some other reason, outstrips the ability of the economy to supply it. That may not be a monetary phenomenon. It might be too much government spending. It might be, around the world, people get rich and they start demanding products out of our markets, and that puts more pressure on prices. On the other hand, another way that could happen is if somehow the supply were shocked, like we saw in the 70s, where the price of oil went up, and that raised costs to do everything, and it raised prices that way. So it's not just too many dollars chasing too few goods. So there's a variety of ways that this can happen.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. And in the case of I was just thinking when he said that we're not doing that, in a way we're, like during holiday sales, we're not necessarily doing that. The retailers are a bit concerned, like again with this women's clothing number being way down.
Yes. You know, I neglected to answer his question, I guess. But the pricing power of firms has a lot to do with the relationship between supply and demand. That if demand is strong and there's not enough supply, at least in the short run, to meet it, well, retailers and every other business has the opportunity to raise price, and they will. On the other hand, just because you want more profits, you don't necessarily have the ability to raise price if the demand isn't there. And I think, you know, the retailers are very smart people, and shoppers are getting to be pretty smart people, too. There's this cat-and-mouse game that goes on every year between those that want to wait for the sales and, you know, and run the risk that they might run out. And retailers know this, so they try to time their sales and, you know, pick the products that they think are going to be hot. In the final analysis, though, I think people are a little bit more conservative about how they're going to spend their money this year. And I think that you're going to find that it's not going to be a down season, but it's not going to be up as much as things were in the past across the board. It's my guess.
And there are a number of people that are probably out there waiting for that slashed price on Christmas Eve.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the post-Festivus sale.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm just waiting till the last minute to maybe get some more sales.
I think that's probably true. You know, the question is, what will they have to choose from at that point?
Right.
Hard to say.
Dave in Madison, hi.
Good morning. I have to apologize. I have a cold. But I had a question, a follow-up about inflation. The answer that you gave the last caller sounds to me like a description of the quantity theory of money. And I'm wondering if the real bills theory, that inflation arises when money supply outstrips the value of assets that back it, might in fact be a source of the inflation given the decrease in housing values.
I didn't quite hear the question. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What is the question in a nutshell?
So basically I'm asking, do you think that it's possible that the decline in housing values right now, either real or perceived, may be contributing to inflation through the real bills theory?
Real bills theory.
I'm not as familiar with that theory as maybe I should be, but I, off the top of my head, I find it hard to believe that a decline in housing prices and the resulting decrease in economic activity would lead to inflation. I don't think that it. I think it would have the opposite effect.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you, I meant to ask you that President Bush, when he gave this speech on Monday, did say that Congress could do some things to help the economy, but could do some negative things to the economy, like raise taxes in any way. And some of the news coverage of that speech points out that his audience listened with respectful silence, yet a line that normally gets applause for President Bush, "I will veto any tax increase," drew none. What do you make of that?
Well, along with the fact that Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, just called for a rather significant tax cut, I say that maybe things have changed a little bit. I think people are concerned about the, I mean, this was the Rotary Club, right? So this is not exactly a, you know, bunch of people that are on welfare, I think. I mean, these are pretty well-heeled folks and typically have been more supportive of tax cuts. But I think people are getting concerned about the deficits that are being run, the amount of government spending that has been going on. So I'm guessing that we're in a very different situation than 1964, when taxes were really high and Kennedy, Johnson at the time, wanted to reduce them. I think that, you know, the tax cut ideology may be in for some examination all the way around.
Yeah. John in Delafield, hi.
Yes, good morning. Happy holidays. Let's stick with taxation for the moment and tax policy. I wonder if the professor could address himself to the Huckabee proposal, which would dispense with income taxes entirely in favor of consumption taxes, a form of sales tax. I'd like to know what sort of impact he feels it might have on the economy, setting aside the political viability for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, this has been an idea that's been around for quite a while. And the idea is, rather than tax people on the income that they make, tax them on the spending that they have, Moreover, instead of having a graduated income tax where people who make more pay a higher percentage, everybody should pay a flat fee. So think of it as a sales tax that we all, you know, it doesn't matter how rich or poor you are, you go to the grocery store and you're going to pay the same tax. This country has had a policy for a long time of progressive taxation. Those that have more assets and wealth and income pay higher percentages. And there's some, you know, philosophical reasons for that, which include the fact that people who make less money have to spend a higher percentage of their income on staples. Mm-hmm. So what it does is it doesn't tax savings, but people at the lower end of the distribution who don't save will literally wind up paying a higher percentage of their income in taxes. And that's where the rub is.
Yeah, we only have a minute. Your outlook then for the economy for 2008?
Well, it's always scary to make predictions about the future, but I would say that I'm less optimistic than I've been in quite a long time. I think there are storm clouds. It's not a done deal that we're going to get a recession, but it wouldn't surprise me. I guess my most, to me, the most likely scenario is that we have really slow growth, at least until all of this subprime stuff kind of works its way through, and we just hope that we don't get any more, surprise bombs in the economy, because I don't think we're going to be in a very good situation to handle something like that in the next 6 months.
Well, happy holidays to you too, Kevin Quinn.
Loves economists.
Thanks very much for being with us.
All right, sure.
Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. We have much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.